Hello everybody, David Hunter here, the Cycling Mole. Today we're going to be doing the day I won Strada Bianche with Tiege Benoot. Strada Bianche, the sixth monument, the most iconic race of the season. Tiege Benoot, 24, Belgian, possibly one of the most talented cyclists on the planet. We're talking about a guy that turned pro at 20 back in 2015, was fifth on debut in Flanders that year, was 20th in his Tour de France debut in 2017. Tiege, welcome. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Now, let's look back at last season. So you started the year off in San Juan, where you finished fifth before going off to altitude training, and then you returned to Belgium for the opening weekend of the season with Omloop Het Nieuwsblad and Kuurne versus Kuurne. Both races, you were at the front, you were being aggressive, and it seemed that you'd started the season off in good form. How was your form heading into Strada Bianche?
Well, I did an altitude camp after Argentina, 3 weeks on Sierra Nevada, where I'm also now. And I came back Wednesday before the Omloop Nieuwsblad, so it was 2 days before. And I immediately had the good legs in the opening weekend, so I knew with 1 week more of rest, I would be on a really good shape already in Strada Bianche, and I think it was one of my best years of the season, actually. Actually, I still felt pretty well till the Brabantse Pijl. So I think I really benefited a lot from the altitude camp I did here. Yeah.
You made your debut in Strada Bianche in 2016, finishing eighth. You then returned in 2017, and despite working for Tim Valens, again finished eighth. Did you have an immediate love for the race?
Yeah, actually, I was the first edition. I was, as you say, I was eight. And I immediately tweeted, I remember, I come back for more. So really the scenery, Italy is something I love. The small steep hills and the off-road sections is a combination in cycling you don't see very often, for sure not on this level. And yeah, also the combination of the riders of the Ardennes Classics with the riders for the Flemish Classics is something unique. And yeah, I only started three times. I was three times top eight, so it's a race that really suits me. And it's one of my top three favorite races of the year, and it was already before I won it. So yeah, I really loved it, the Strada Bianche. Yeah.
You mentioned that you started the season off in good form. As you moved into Strada Bianche, what expectations did you put on yourself in terms of a result?
Well, as soon as we arrived in Italy, it was snowing. Or there was still snow on the airport, and there I knew it would be a really really hard edition. So I was really really looking forward and curious to see how the sections would react on all the bad weather and the snow. And we went on the recon the day before Strada Bianche, the Friday, and the snow and the ice started to melt, so it really got like deep mud. It was sticking on the tires and. Yeah, it was something special. The bike was full of mud after two sections, and you know already, it would be a really special race. Also, for the bikes, really difficult for the mechanics. Different tires, different brakes, adapted brakes. So I was really looking forward. I saw the images of one stage in the Giro where it was raining, with some gravel sections in, and yeah, I was just curious to see. And I knew in these weather conditions, I had a good chance. But I was not thinking to win, of course, but I wanted to do like a top five or something. And then in the end, it turned out to be a win. So, yeah, really nice memory.
What is climbing and descending like in those terrible, muddy conditions?
Yeah, for sure. It's actually less dangerous, the descending, because it just goes slower. But you really need to ride in front. We saw a motorbike going out of the track. We saw... I saw riders going in the ditch. I always was in top five, top ten, I think, on the most hard sections. You really shouldn't save way to keep yourself safe and in front of the bunch there. So I think if you were in position 50, you see so many things happening, which I didn't see. So actually, halfway the race, we were only 40, 50 guys left, and I talked to a teammate, and I was saying, yeah, really. I still really feel fresh. So he said, yeah, I'm really fucked. You will be close today. So he was right.
At the start of the race, what were the team tactics?
I was leader for sure, and then we had Jens Kuekeler, who was also protected, but I don't remember really well. I think we had to put one guy in the break. Victor Kampenaerts was in, so this was already he could help me also when the break with Valverde and Kwiatkowski left. He pulled before I went before I attacked across the gap at Sagan. So this was a good plan. And for the rest, I had some guys staying with me. But yeah, in the final of the race, everyone, every leader was alone. So that's also the nicest thing about this kind of classics racing is that you, at the end, it's just men against men, and not the helpers are not there anymore. Yeah.
The TV cameras turned on with about 60 kilometers to go. Valverde and Kwiatkowski were already up the road in what looked like a very dangerous break. You attacked on Monte Santa Maria and bridged over with a group of other riders, and then things started to get awfully tactical. What was happening in that period of the race?
Actually, I made the jump together with Sagan. So there was the first time in my life I could actually be in the wheel of Sagan and think, yeah, I really can go. Actually, I can go faster. So I could take a turn and put the tempo even higher. So there I was really confident. But then, as you say, we come to a point with a group of maybe 20 guys. It starts to be really tactical, and the other guys starts to look at each other. And there I was thinking, like, what do I have to do now? Because they had still a few teammates, like Moscon was still there, Daniel also still there. Mühlberger, they started to attack also. And then I talked with the car, and he said, yeah, just go. Here, these guys are dead. They are looking at each other, and they were correct, actually. So I had to attack 3-4 times to be in a nice group. And then another time to be together with Seri, so we could chase the two leaders, Van Aert and Bardet. So, yeah, was the right choice to not wait on the big guns.
As some of the big riders started to look at each other, Romain Bardet and Wout Van Aert managed to escape the bunch. With about 38 kilometres to go, and with the gap heading upwards towards a minute, Giovanni Visconti managed to get himself away from the peloton. You managed to follow. A few others came across, and quickly it looked like this was the group that were going to get away from the bunch. But things weren't going particularly well, and the gap continued to rise. At 31 kilometres to go, you attacked, and Peter Seri managed to go with you. How happy were you? You had another Belgian for company.
Just before I attacked, like 10 seconds before, I said to him, I will go, try to go with me. Because I knew the gap was a bit too big to close it on my own. It was 45 seconds, I think, to 1 minute maybe. And I knew he is a guy who will ride with me. So we attacked immediately, had a nice gap. You saw the other guys couldn't react anymore. And then we were chasing, but every time he pulled, the pace dropped a little bit. He was really strong, but the pace dropped a little bit. So I knew I had to make a move on my own. And on the last section of the last really hard section of Colle Penzuto, I knew there I was not in disadvantage to be alone against the two in front. So right from the bottom, I went full. Seri dropped immediately, and I think I closed 30 seconds on the section, and then still 10 seconds afterwards in the descent. So there I knew when I came with the leaders, I had the best cards to play and to win the race.
Was your plan always to attack Seri on Colle Penzuto and not on the flat?
Yeah, I think when you go like on a more flat section on concrete, when you're riding with two swapping turns, it's you're saving a lot of more energy than when you're alone. So I wanted to do it on a section where I'm alone, and they also have to push there. So I think it's the most easy way to close a gap uphill, than it's more easy than do it on a flat or downhill road. So that's what I did. And also then I had a bit recovery before the next last section, where I attacked immediately, so I think it was the right way to do it, yeah.
Was this your idea, or did it come from the director in the car?
Actually, this is a funny part. I when I attacked with Seri, while I was attacking, actually, they just said in the radio, like, Okay, Tish, you if you still want to win, you have to go another if you have to split up the group a little bit because the leaders are still taking time, so it's time to come closer. So it was already the right decision to attack. And then from there on, they just keep how to say keep pushing me forward, and they gave me differences of the time gap. Also, in the end, for sure, it was a big relief when I was on my own that the car was behind me, and there I felt safe because I was really scared to have a puncture or to have a mechanic or something. We rode with the case of Phelon under the saddle, who is measuring the power and the heart rate output, but this case came loose. And the bridge of my saddle, where my saddle is on, almost broke because the thing of Velon was really like cluttering on the carbon rails. So I've always heard something cluttering on my bike, and I think it was my battery of the shifting was coming loose. But in the end, it was this this battery also of the Velon sensors, let's say. And afterwards, we saw actually I was really lucky that my saddle didn't broke because the rails were really like half cut out.
When you attacked, it was at 18.7 kilometers to go, and the gap was 40 seconds. At 18.1 kilometers to go, the gap was down to 30 seconds. At 17.2 kilometers, it was 20 seconds. At 16.6 kilometers, it was 10 seconds. And eventually, you closed the gap down at 15.2 kilometers to go. The last 10 seconds seemed to take an age. Did it feel like that on the bike?
No. I really felt like I was going to close the gap. Yeah, I really felt as soon as I heard in the radio I was coming closer this fast. I think if you would see it in time, the first part is the same has a, more or less the same time as the second part, like you're saying it. Like if you go 1K downhill at 60K per hour, it's 1 minute. If you go 1K uphill, 30K per hour, 20K per hour is 3 minutes. So yeah, and in distance is different, but in time length, I think it's more or less the same. But like I said, it's more easy to close a gap uphill as downhill.
How did you manage to eat and drink in such tough conditions?
Yeah, that was actually something I was also really busy with in the final. I think as soon as I as you see me closing the gap, I take another gel. Was something I was really scared of also to have a hunger flat in the end. So yeah, it's just about the whole race. It's about drinking and eating. But in the end, I only drink maximum 2 bottles, I think. So it's about taking gels and most of the time also staying warm. I had a lot of layers on in the start, and it's a case you have to swap rain jackets. I think I had the total 3 or 4 rain jackets on that day. I always changed to have a new one, a dry one, also gloves. And then in the end, when you go full, you're not cold anymore. And yeah, it's about keep eating, taking gels, bars. Not as much as you can, but you really have to remind yourself to do it. Otherwise, there are not so many occasions in a race like this that it's going this easy. You start thinking by yourself about eating and drinking, so you really have to mind yourself about it.
You then reach the final sector, La Tolfe. Was it your plan to go full gas from the bottom?
Yeah, more or less. I knew the parkour really well from the years before. I already did the race twice. I did twice the recon, so I knew this was a hard sector. And if you are the best in the race, you can drop the others there. And I gave it a try from the bottom. I immediately looked back, or after a few hundred meters, I looked back and I saw the others trying, but they couldn't follow. So that's when the moment I knew it would be a full gas TT to the bottom of the Piazza del Campo.
You had 10 seconds at the crest of the climb, and that gap continued to increase as you went on. When did you start to believe that you were going to win this race?
I think with 4 or 5 k to go, you start the downhill to Siena. Actually, before you have a two other hard uphill sections. You don't really see it on television, but it's going uphill not steep, but it's a wide road. It's 4-5% up, I think. And there I was really keeping the pace high. There I was really still thinking if there was someone other strong in the back, he can come back here. But as soon as the downhill started, 4-5K to go, there I knew, okay, don't take any risks anymore. You have 40 seconds. Just make sure you come down easy. I also took this corners really easy. And then I had just keep the tempo till the bottom of the climb of Siena, and there I really could enjoy the winning of feeling and watch around a bit, see all the spectators, and it was really goosebumps.
You arrived at Piazza del Campo solo. Nobody else was there. It was just you and the fans, something that doesn't happen too often. Just how did that feel riding that final kilometer?
Yeah, you know you're going to win, but still you don't understand it really well, I think. It's a special feeling. Eh? You try to understand it or to let it sink in, but it's really difficult. Also in the car, they told me just enjoy this moment now. And that's what I try to do. Because after the race, it's immediately podium, interviews, doping control, press conference. So then it takes maybe 2 hours to really have a moment for yourself again. So I think it's the nicest way to win a race is with a solo, yeah. A solo where you can enjoy the last K, let's say, and know you win already. Yeah.
Straight after the race, you have a lot of commitments to see to. When did you get some time to think about and process the victory?
Like I said, all these things you have to do. I think maybe it takes altogether 1 hour 30 or something. And then I had to go. I had still my bike, but the bus was out of the center of Siena, the parking for the buses. And I was there still with the doctor and the press officer of the team. And I said, yeah, you can start walking. I will go by bike. I've been already to Siena the years before, also for holiday. And I thought I knew where the buses are. But after the race, I was a bit distracted. And I lost, actually, the road to the bus. So I was riding on for 20, 30 minutes, I think, till I got to the bus. I also had to ask where the buses are to the bus driver of Trek. But actually, I didn't care on this moment. It was a moment for myself. I could rethink the race a bit in my head, and I came late to the bus, but it was no problem.
Have you watched it back on TV?
I think so, yes. After, yeah. I saw a lot of like fragments of it and highlights a few times, but also watched the race again, I think. But yeah, it's different when you come home after the race, but now we stay there for Treno Adriatico, so it's different than when you come home after a race.
Did you have a chance to celebrate properly with Treno Adriatico coming so close?
We had a dinner that was already planned. It's every year with the Sudal company of Italy. So there we went with the team. It was a nice dinner. We had some wine, not too much. And I was just relaxing also the day after. It was really nice with the team. We drank a coffee, ate some cake. Read the Gazzetta dello Sport. A lot of interviews also with the Belgian press, radio, TV. So it's different, I think, when you win Roubaix on the end of the Classics campaign than when you win Strade Bianche. I also wanted to stay focused for the races coming up, yeah.
You've always had to deal with huge pressure from the Belgian media.
Yeah.
Did the win take a lot of pressure off your shoulders?
Yeah, I had a lot. I was only 23 years old, but they kept questioning me or demanding me like when I would win my first race. But the day I won, the day after, was in the newspaper like, it's one of the 10 guys of the recent cycling history who could win a race of this level before he got 24. So they were talking different than they were before. But this question I don't get anymore, so it's nice, yeah. I knew one day it would be possible. It came sooner than I expected to win a race of this level, but it was also the right moment, I think, yeah.
I always remember you telling me that you only ride big races and it's tough to win them.
Yeah, it's different, but when you win a race, it's more nice than win 10 small races, I think. That's what counts in cycling, huh? The big races.
This year, it's the same route.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about going back to defend your title?
Yeah, we'll see. We have again a strong team, and I'm first looking forward to the opening weekend, and then the week off, Strade Bianchi, first time with number one race of this level. So I'm just looking forward, as I'm looking forward to all the other classics, and I try to repeat in one of these classics what I could do in Strade Bianchi last year. If it's against Strade Bianchi, it's super nice. But if it's Nieuwsblad, Harelbeke, Flanders, it's also nice. Yeah.
A massive thanks to Tej for going back and looking at this iconic victory.
You're welcome.
One that will last long in my memory, I'm sure in his memory too. For people who have listened, a huge thank you. But how could you help? If you rate this, if you review it, if you subscribe to it, that would be a massive, massive help to me. It only takes a couple of minutes, so please do. And I look forward to joining you again in the near future.